Mini episode 404 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
30 seconds.
In front of all these people, you're going to pull out a gun and you're going to shoot an unarmed man.
20 seconds.
So what are you going to do? 10.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge and the Justified episode recap.
It was justified.
With your original dignitaries.
Burn the hole!
Rick Morris and Jason Jones.
You got ice cold water running through your veins.
Breaking down each Justified episode the moment they've concluded.
Did you take a peek inside the soul of Raymond Newton?
I'm just gonna let that old dog lie.
Real-time reactions. Next level analysis.
You seem to be harboring a bit of hostility there, brother.
So I've been told.
And now, your dignitaries.
Well, I believe we can take her from here.
In the deep, dark hills of eastern Kentucky, that's the place where I trace my bloodline. And it's there I read on a hillside gravestone, "You will never leave Harlan alive."
All right, everybody, welcome to mini episode number 404 of the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Jason Jones, your FDH Lounge dignitaries, breaking down the season finale of Justified for the 15th of the program and the strains right there of You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive. We did, of course, hear another version of that at the end of the episode tonight, a stomp version of it, I guess, if you will. It seems to be a tradition on this program to set it up. To have it on the show, it's a way of summing up where we've been and where we're going into the next season. There's a lot of times a critical death that comes in the episode, and tonight it happened to be Darryl Crowe Jr. It was, I thought, a very gripping episode. It really kind of had the edge of my seat like I rarely was this season, maybe episode 5.5, but not much beyond that. I'll be very interested to hear what Jason thinks and if he thinks that it lived up to the billing tonight. Jason, my man, how you doing, buddy? What are your thoughts coming out of this season finale, which was very consequential?
Well, we're not in the business of tooting our own horns, but I'm increasingly believing that we were right to sort of hedge our bets on the idea that this is not closure of one season, but the transition between sort of a two-part series story at the end here. Look, in my opinion, there's a season when it can only end one of two ways. One, which is what everyone is hoping for, is this big building crescendo of a moment that leaves you hopelessly wondering what they could possibly do next season. Whether it be to top this season or where do they go from here. Or you have the type of thing which is just a handing of the baton, which is what I think we saw tonight. Yes, it was gripping. It was intense at moments. I was posting sort of live as we were going through the episode, screaming at the TV and, repeating things that I had said out loud to my TV. It was a good episode. It was a very good episode that did bring some things together. But in the end, I really think that the season 5 finale was really just a transitional moment into season 5 or to season 6.
I especially felt that in the last segment, which again, I was having to kind of multitask as that was going on, but I really kind of got the sense that that was almost the first set of scenes for next year and really kind of setting the table there. Did you kind of get the same sense there that after the top of the hour break, it was almost like a sneak preview of season six as opposed to still the end of five?
Yeah, you know, I hesitated when you see Ava signing papers to get out of prison. I thought something was weird about that, the way it just kind of abruptly happened, but I didn't second guess it. And in my mind, I thought she's going to go. She's going to meet up with Boyd. They'll rekindle that whole thing. Boyd will have something to do. He'll push that aside and say, not today. And there will be this moment of, you know, coming together again. And we're going to have a Bonnie and Clyde situation. And whoever, whatever happens later, who cares? But we'll enjoy this moment. And when that didn't go the way I thought it did, I didn't know what was happening, but I did get the strong sensation that this is the part where we have already ended season five, and now we're sort of looking to season six. So yeah, as details in that last segment would unveil themselves, I think we're clearly setting up for something interesting with not only Raylan and Ava on the bridge, but the relationship between Ava and Boyd now. This whole, you get the impression that season six is going to be all about Raylan doing X in order to get to Florida, which is interesting. That's not something we ever really talked about. And I'm not quite sure that I'm not officially on board with the idea yet. But point is, last 10 minutes of the episode was all about setting up what's about to happen. And I don't think there's any tricks to it. I don't think there's any wrinkles. They're not playing any games with us. They literally just said, here is what you need to know to go into season six.
They really did. It's an interesting technique, the way that they used the final segment of the program as a means of essentially doing that. I don't know that I've ever seen a show do that before. Almost start the next season with one segment at the end of the previous season, and then you wait all the way till next year to see what happens from there. So we've already seen, you know, in a very real sense, I think, the first scene of season six, or series of scenes, or segment. As far as it went there with Ava, it was really interesting to me because I saw a little bit of a parallel. It took all season for Wendy Crow eventually to turn on her brother, but having her son put in harm's way, going to be tried as an adult by his actions, that was enough to do it to get her to step up. Last week with Ava, when she was told by Raylan that Boyd had cut a deal to work with the Federales to address some of his issues, it was a thing where Ava, despite the fact that they had broken up, despite the fact that she broke it off with him, was still devastated to the core when he wasn't making her release, or at least something for her, a core part of what was happening. So I got to tell you, as much as I thought last week when the file first came out, my first reaction to you was Deus Ex Machina, what are they doing here? The file suddenly materialized. I'm thinking tonight, at first, when she gets released, she just gets released now? We see her in solitary, and then, the other guard recanted, and this and that, and whatever. And then we get it at the end, and all the pieces come together because she is Boyd's blind spot. And ultimately, all the pieces fit together, and you're going, wow, this is what Boyd will never see coming. The fact that she was alienated from him by the thought that he had forgotten about her in jail. And see how this will go. That's it.
The interesting thing about all this, if we want to draw some parallels, I'll go wider scheme than yours, although I agree with what you're saying with the Wendy Crow angle. For those that haven't seen the entire series and are kind of catching this late, we really hope you take some time in the, I guess, justified off-season to catch up. But I'll try to make this as spoiler alert-free as possible. The series starts with Raylan coming to town, greeting Ava, in the wake of what we believe will be Boyd making problems for her. And Raylan is there to sort of, you know, rekindle whatever they had or didn't have in an effort to protect her from Boyd. And I think ultimately by this time next season, that's we're going to be right back to that square one where it's not a romantic thing. Raylan is not going to be there at her knight in shining armor. However, in the same capacity was in the first episode of this series, I think Raylan is going to serve as the buffer between Boyd's rage or what have you and Ava's safety. So that is probably going to happen, and it'll be interesting to watch it unfold, especially if we're to assume that if Ava's to play her part, she's got to play her part, and that may come to be a problem or at least risky at times. But yeah, is that, you're absolutely right about the blind spot. He's never going to see that coming. She could say anything to him at this point, and he will believe it to be sincere. And I'm sure he doesn't realize the rift that was caused because he wasn't in the room when that information was given out about him making a deal and no longer is Ava's deal on the table. So there's that whole thing, that whole dynamic just between Raylan and the Marshals chasing Boyd, Boyd doing whatever he does, and I'll come back to that moment, that point in a moment, and then how Ava factors into either side will be incredible, because right now they're setting us up to believe that Ava's going to help take him down. I'm not completely closed off to the idea that Ava maybe plays both sides if something comes back around, but that's the beauty of waiting for next season. The one thing we haven't really discussed yet that is very interesting and is something that you and I have talked about before, again, tooting our own horns here, is the Boyd Crowder is about to walk away from the drug trade. We get a little glimpse into whether or not the mysterious lady in the RV is just the widow of the bad guy, or maybe she was the bad guy the whole time, which is perks my attention. And then they offer Boyd the idea of doing something that he's, quote, good at. And you can almost see a smile start to creep in. So maybe in this realm of making parallels, Boyd goes back to season one Boyd, which would be interesting. So there's a whole dynamic here, and it still remains U.S. Marshals, Boyd, and what is the thing with Ava? What does that ultimately mean? And I think that will probably define the major components of next season.
Boy, there's a lot of different angles there to what you said, but I agree with all of them. And I think it really is as simple as this, that you're looking at a situation with Boyd where, again, he's not going to necessarily see anything coming with Ava. She's projecting real ambivalence towards him right now. And I don't know how much of that is by design and how much of that is what she's actually feeling that she's allowing to seep through. But the situation as it goes into next season, by the way, too, I think on the precedent of referring to DEA agent Eric Roberts, I think we should just refer to her as Mob Widow Mary Steenburgen, because okay. that at least amuses me for us to do that. I agree with you. I think she is the real bad guy in the situation here. AUSA Vasquez sure seems to think so based on their confrontation from a couple of episodes ago. So she's looming big for next year. I would say maybe is the big bad, but in the larger sense, I think it's going to be Boyd who's the real big bad, because we have now finally reached the climax of it of Raylan versus Boyd. And before that came down where Raylan was told that by Vasquez that he couldn't leave just yet, it was starting to look like the series finale. And I'm thinking to myself, this is what I kind of envisioned it might look like at the end of next season. You know, he's getting ready. It's time to go to Florida. It's time to be with Winona and the baby. And then, boom, it kind of snaps back. And I don't know if his transfer is being put on hold now or how they're going to address that. But the fact that he is sticking around to take care of the unfinished business, which is Boyd Crowder. The other unfinished business that he had coming into tonight, it's very interesting that he ended up talking to Art about this briefly, and Art queried him about whether he killed Darryl Crowe Jr. or not, and he did not. But I got the sense of it. I couldn't tell. By the way, let's back up a second here. Wendy Crowe, I saw that part coming. Did you, when she went in there? And this would mean, by the way, that Raylan misled Rachel when he was acting like she just left on her own volition. But I saw it coming, particularly the way she was talking to him. Did you sniff that out, yes or no?
Yes, but not right away. Initially, I was believing the Raylan Rachel angle, that she just left, she wasn't going to help, and she was pretty beat up about it. And then, you know, the way Wendy started in, I got it. But then what the tip was, just because Daryl Crowe yelled back at her for about 10 seconds is not enough to get her to flip her perspective. Because she went in with, this is your fault, and you're the bad guy, and then he yells back, and then says something about everything falls on his shoulders, and all of a sudden, Wendy's now submissive, and she's crying, and I'm sorry, and all this. And I'm like, wait a minute, there's no way she flips that quick, especially with her son sort of hanging in the wind. So the answer is, yes, I caught it before they probably wanted me to, but not right away. You probably read that one a little quicker than I did.
On that one, I probably did. I smelled the rat on that. But here's what I'm thinking, too. I don't know if this crossed your mind or not, but it almost took me back to last year, the final episode with Nikki Augustine, where Raylan was almost directly involved in the man's murder. I look at it tonight with Daryl Crowe Jr. In my very cynical mind, Raylan decided to save the taxpayers the cost of a trial because, okay, he was her backup in that situation. But he kind of just really let it play out, didn't he? Yeah, right down to letting Daryl make a move to where she blasts him and then she finishes him. I mean, Raylan psychologically kind of had that planned out in my mind to where Wendy just finishes it right then and there, and that's how it went. And he's her witness that it was self-defense, and he goes in and he takes care of it. That, to me, is not as direct as what happened to Nikki Augustine, but that, to me, is Raylan maybe indicating that what he learned from that and to do a better, cleaner job the next time around. Not cleaner in the legal or the moral sense necessarily, but cleaner in terms of getting away with it. As far, just the way he was taunting him, too. And if you thought at any point during the season that you could feel bad for Daryl Crowe Jr., as he's lying on the floor dying of a gunshot wound to the throat, Raylan just stops to kick him figuratively in the balls one more time. That moment there, if that doesn't show you the, you know, good guy with shades of gray, if you will, or whatever it is that Raylan Givens is, that scene to me encapsulated it perfectly for his character.
The whole moment, like once you realize what's happening, you're predisposed to think she may get a shot off, she may wound him, but Raylan's going to jump in, stop it, you know, arrest everybody, and walk away. The fact that it played out the way that you just outlined, I think, says a lot to the situation. Point of clarity, though. As I only watched it straight through, didn't rewind it or anything, she had her gun on his junk. I look away for a fraction of a second, I hear a gunshot, I look back, and Daryl Crowe's hands are covered in blood. Am I to assume that she shot him in the junk?
I believe so. I mean,
okay.
I was trying to follow it. It was tough with the camera shots and everything, and we, again, neither of us have had a chance to take a second look at it. This is real time that we're doing this. Yeah, I think she did shoot him in the junk. And
okay,
again,
that's a whole
with a shot
other,
to the neck. Yeah.
That's a whole other thing. I mean, like, shoot him in the thigh, whatever. He's appalled
yeah.
that she shot him. You shoot him in the junk, and a guy like that's probably just at a loss. And then next thing you know, he charges in and takes one in the throat. And here's the funny thing, I'll clear up until the point where Raylan stands over him and says, I believe it was, I told you you'd wish I would have killed you. I was still under the impression that it was a flesh wound and that, yes, he was bleeding, but that it wasn't going to be fatal. The second Raylan stood over him, you're like, we go back to season four and it's almost like there's a new Raylan, that there's a line and he really flirts with it. He really walks right up to that edge, and in some cases, with Nikki Augustine, you can make the argument that he crossed it. So that was a whole very telling thing, as you pointed out, to where we are, because I'd like to think that there was a point in the evolution that Raylan would not have just sat there and let it happen. The way that he was just sort of cold as ice when he said, "Wendy, this is the part where you put the gun down." You know, he could have said that a minute earlier. He could have gotten up from his stance, walked towards Wendy so she at least knew that he was going to intervene before taking the big shot. So, I mean, draw whatever conclusion you want from that, but clearly Raylan is not the same guy he was in season one, and maybe that's the point.
Yeah, I'm going to say it. I think his orchestration in that scenario went all the way up to Daryl Crowe Jr. Dying.
Well, Rick, here's what's really interesting. Take all that we just talked about and now project that on the next season if we are to believe that everything is about taking down Boyd Crowder. It's going to get personal,
yeah.
And at some point, I think we have to make the logical conclusion that the final takedown will probably involve some gray area.
Oh, more than definitely that is the case. I will tell you, too, as far as getting shot, it's one of those things where, and thank God I never have been, and I hope I never will be, but I imagine it's a thing of where if you're not shot in the head, through the middle of the chest, whatever, you must go through this rationalization of, okay, I can live through this, whatever. The groin, okay, you can bleed out from there. There's arteries. But it's one of those things where I have to believe that is the singular area of the body of where you immediately stop doing the justifications in your mind, if I can still live. Because it's like, yeah, don't think I want to, just finish me off. I'm guessing that's what it would be like to be shot in the groin. You can beat it.
I don't want to get all Discovery Channel on this situation, but here's my thought. You get shot in the arm, in the ribs, in the leg. It goes through, you know, it's going to penetrate skin and tissue, hit arteries or not, hit organs or not, and either stop or push through the other side. Here's the thing that kills me, and I am not a med student or any expert of the human body, but here's my thought. You get shot in the groin anywhere in that general area, there's a backstop that the bullet has to hit. It doesn't stop on its own, I wouldn't imagine. And yes, there's a great deal of artery and tissue and all kinds of stuff, male or female, to cut through that it probably does. But how bad is it when it goes through, tears stuff up, and probably fractures, hits, makes contact with the pelvic bone? It's got to be worse than every other place you could get hit. And yeah, there's a part of you that at first feels the pain, doesn't think it's that bad, then the pain rushes back again. And then as you're trying to rationalize it, I can't think of a single person, regardless of gender, who doesn't go, yeah, this isn't worth it. Just here, point it in my head because this is stupid. Let's just stop.
Yeah.
End it. I don't want to know what it's like to pee out of a straw.
Yeah, I think Daryl had given up on everything right at that very moment, as well he should have. So he ends up going down, and it's a scenario where, by the way, as far as getting shot, there was a little bit of a mistake that I made last week when we were talking about that nobody was shot to death in there, and I think I made the broader statement about nobody dying. Of course, Penny died in prison from the stabbing. I ended up having to fact-check myself after the point, just because we're doing this in real time and I'm prone to these kind of things. Also, I know I've made repeated references during the season to Decoy being episode 4.10 last year. It was 4.11. Get Drew was 4.10. I kind of conflate those in my mind because, to me, that's the best back-to-back combo of episodes in Justified history, the unveiling of Drew Thompson and then trying to get him out of Carlin afterwards. So I've made that mistake a number of times through the season, 4.10, 4.11. on Decoy. I wanted to correct myself on that. I did that in the course of looking at some of the ratings for the last couple of seasons. Good old Platinum Smalls, our buddy in the 21st Century Media Alliance, was feeding me some stuff here. I was telling you off air earlier today, 2.2 million viewers for 5.8 of this season, and 2.2 million is a little bit down from what the last couple of seasons' average has been, but ever since 5.8, it was down to only 2 million. Since then, 200,000 viewers of this highly serialized show vanished after 5.8, I presume out of disgust with the slow pace of the season, the disjointed kind of nature of this season, non-linear. So I kind of wonder where they went. I kind of hope they came back for the finale because, again, you and I felt that it was probably going to finish strong. 5.11, 5.12, 5.13. We said last week it seemed to be setting up like a three-part season finale. I'm not going to rank this one up there with the best three-episode stretches in the history of the show. I think you could probably find a better stretch at the end of season two, at the end of season three, and whichever way you want to go last year, whether it's 4.9, 4.10, 4.11, or 4.10, 4.11, 4.12. But I feel like the season finished as strong as it possibly could have, and even by my idealistic standard of I wanted season five to be better than season four, and I clearly don't think it was. This is where, again, I go back to a lot of the 200,000 people who were part of that exodus who I hope came back and got to see what I thought was a great season finale. It's all about the standard by which you're pronouncing this, Jason, because if the standard is I'm disappointed because it wasn't better than season four and the best shows of all time should always get better and better and better as they go along, that's one thing. That's where I'm at. To say, I don't like season five. Season five sucked. Well, what's that saying about bad pizza is better than, I don't know what it is, whether it's most other foods or whatever, which, by the way, is bull crap. Go eat Papa John's and then come back to me and tell me if you believe that. But that whole thing, listen, a bad season of Justified by anyone's standards is better than 99% of the other stuff on TV. So I think that's where the fairness needs to come in as we're evaluating this as a whole.
Yeah, I strongly urge everyone to not be overly critical. I know we're going to see that with the whole ratings issue. I really sort of implore the makers of the show to not take too much heat for that. We know that in this era of television, that's really not the case. Viewer retention is a huge thing. And although you say something like 2.2 million, you know, when they only lost something in the six figures, a person might be inclined to think that's not a big deal, but you can bet the people at FX were really crapping the bed on that one. I really wish that we didn't live in that situation with what we're dealing with right now. The show, as we've talked about before, is a story. You made the reference that you can't take one episode and critique it because that's like taking one chapter out of the book. And here's the thing. As I said when we started this show tonight, I don't think that what we just witnessed was this big climactic moment that brings closure to the episode. And as you just mentioned again, I do think that 11, 12, 13 were a three-part season finale, but of the bigger picture, season five is part one of a two-part series finale. I think that you really can't be overly critical and judge this and say that season five wasn't as good. Now, by all means, if you want to say to date, season five is the least impressive, I would argue that season one is, all things considered, but I'll grant you the premise. Here's the thing, though. When this is all said and done, I think we're going to look back on it and say seasons five and six together are first or second best of the entire series as one thing, and then we can have the debate about whether it was season four or season two or season three. I don't think that we can hold season five onto itself until we've seen all of season six and come to the conclusion that it is standalone or not.
Well, that's an interesting point, and I think largely a fair one. And in our remaining time, the only counterpoint that I want to make to that would be to say it was a conscious choice to go nonlinear, as you brilliantly coined last week, and the way that they did it, and the whole thing with the crows and chaos theory. I saw that Elmore Leonard was throwing that out there this year, and that they're going to be like an invasive species in Harlan that doesn't quite fit in and whatever, and it seemed to be a very deliberate choice for the season. But the way that it went, the crows is the big antagonists here. Again, I kind of found it to be unsatisfying. I was not, if I want to compare the crows to, you know, Quarles or Mags Bennett or anything like that. So to an extent, though, don't you think it's fair to compare season five unto itself for the things that were under their control? I understand that you're saying that it's a setup for season six, but there are ways they could have executed season five that I would just, I think it's a fair critique to say, gee, maybe I would like to have seen some of this executed differently.
Well, sure, and like I said, from where we stand today, sure. If you were to ask me right now, you've got the next week off, and you're going to binge-watch Justified, would you rather watch season four or season five? Well, absolutely, I'd rather watch season four. I would argue the point that I'd probably rather watch season two, three, then four, then five, not because it's in order, but because I just like how the two, three, and four kind of blend together. So, yeah,
yes.
As a personal preference, you can say I didn't enjoy it as much. I'm just saying that before people start jumping ship and saying that because of season five they don't want to watch season six or they'll wait until the thing is out on DVD or whatever, I would just say I strongly feel that season five, although it was not linear and was all over the place, an amalgam of a number of different things that absolutely they could control, I got the impression by the way this last episode went, they never intended to give you closure on anything. Whereas in season two, when Mag sits down and sips that drink, you know all your questions have been answered. When Augustine dies the way he does, you've got closure there. We didn't have that. And I can't imagine that it's on accident. So by all means, if you want to rank five as your, fourth or fifth favorite season, I would understand that. I just say we got to reserve some judgment until the whole thing's over.
I agree with that. I would say probably fourth place for me as of right now. Season one, again, probably has to be in last place for most people because, as you've always said, it's the setup season, and for most shows like this, season one should always be the one that you would put in last place. I know that you and I are going to be planning on doing a season in review recap here, similar to and bookending what we did going into the season. So we'll kind of take a breath, however long we feel like it takes us, a week, 10 days, whatever, to kind of set up, assess this season, look at where we're going for next season with Boyd now being squarely in the crosshairs of the feds, everything that he did with Tim and Rachel coming to his rescue tonight, but the way that he set that up, that really got Rachel now really raging to get him in the crosshairs. So Boyd versus Raylan is the end game. We started to see the beginnings of that here tonight, and with Ava sort of being the pawn caught in the middle of that. And, again, a very tantalizing look ahead to next year. Season 6 could very well be the best. All I know is in the interim, I'm looking forward to the Season 5 recap with you once we've had a chance to kind of take our breath here, see what we think of it then, and start to look ahead to Season 6. Thank you so much, my man. We've had a great season doing this, and I look forward to one more big one with you.
All right.
And we will catch you folks very, very shortly with that one. Thank you for checking us out here today in the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse, and The Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.